Diving into the news segment, Ken talks about a Paste magazine op-ed about surrendering to IPA dominance. Nick scares us with the current CO2 shortage in New England and Europe. Dan discusses the drop in barrel sales for craft beer in the most recent quarters. And Wendy walks us down memory lane of discontinued beers that we'll never get to try again. This episode of Better on Draft is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor, North Center Brewing, and the upcoming Burning Foot Beer Festival in Muskegon, Michigan. Tickets are still on sale at burningfoot.beer.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to the news segment. My name is Ken. It is July 29, 2022. Let's go around and see what everybody is drinking, starting with Nick. Nick, what do you got?
I moved to the Partake Brewing Blonde. It actually exploded on me during our previous recording segment.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, to run and clean it before my whole office smelled like beer.
And Dan, what about you?
Oh, good to have these guys back. Sleepy Dog Brewing, Wet Nose, Peanut Butter Stout, now being made in Illinois and shipped out to here. It's great to have it back.
And Wendy, what about you?
So I am still sipping on this vanilla rum cake from Supernatural. It may be 3 years old, but it's held up pretty well. A little bit lighter than it was when we first had it. But I also have this Vertices, I hope I'm saying that right, hazy IPA from Fun Guys Brewing. It was a porch trap I got earlier this week. I'm excited to try it.
And for me, I've got my final can of Zum Urban Rest. Their alt beer, of course, as Eric Smith said in the chat during the interview. And I'm still sipping on for the rest of the time. This hashtag gin from Oso in Arizona. Once again, thank you, Amy. Appreciate her for getting me that amazing bottle.
Is it good?
It's very, very smooth. I like it. I'm actually drinking it straight up, no ice, no rocks, nothing. And it's going down very, very smooth. So I'm very happy with this gift for sure. But as always with segment two, we have the craft beer news. And we are going to start the craft beer news off with me, as there is an article from PasteMagazine.com, everybody's favorite Paste magazine. Title of the article is "Iconic Craft Breweries Are Completely Surrendering to IPA Dominance." This article obviously caught my mind because we talked about it so many times about the domination that is IPAs when you go to breweries, how many IPAs are. And they made everybody into three categories. You're one of these three people. You are either a rank and file IPA drinker. You are an IPA doomer, which is those frustrated souls who have come to resent the country's most popular and prolific craft beer styles. Might as well call it just Dan. These folks can often be found at the pulpit preaching about the impending doom of beer variety as it threatens to be crushed under the inexorable tide of hops. And then there's the IPA agnostics who acknowledge that the style has grown to rather ridiculous proportions, but also find themselves just as annoyed with the latest iteration of the sky is falling from beer fans who believe they spend entirely too much time complaining about the IPA. So the large part of this article that really caught my eye, we had Sierra Nevada on a year ago, I believe, and this guy actually went through the entire website of Sierra Nevada, and while Sierra Nevada is known for their pale ale, their Torpedo, which is their double IPA, Narwhal, I believe, was a Sierra Nevada project.
Yeah, give me a barrel-aged Narwhal. They still make that. It's a great beer.
But if you go into Sierra Nevada right now, their four core brands are the pale ale and three IPAs. They also added the Little Things series, which was promoted here on Better on Draft when they came in, which was two hazy IPAs, a kettle sour, and a citrus wheat beer. And if you look at the seasonals, all four seasonals are now IPAs. So that is the system. He actually tried to go through, this person tried to go through, I shouldn't say he, I don't know who it was. Jim, so I guess it's a he, went through all these, the website, looking for things like information about their Oktoberfest or information about their Mexican lager, and really couldn't find anything. And he said that it wasn't necessarily something that was limited to Sierra Nevada. Obviously, New Belgium has been getting into promotion with their Voodoo Ranger. If you look at Lagunitas, it's hard to find a lot of the original Lagunitas style brands like their Czech Pils. Instead, you're just stuck with looking at a lot of their regular IPA offerings. Now, for me, I'm definitely in the IPA Doomers category for sure, just because when breweries are fighting for shelf space, they have to fight against all the other breweries, so they need to sell something, and of course what sells the most, and that's IPAs. I have accepted this in my life that that is just what the world has come to. But are you seeing, and are we seeing, from the major brands just a complete submission to the IPA world, or do we think they you know, the ones that are definitely holding out, like your Alaskan Amber, your maybe a New Glarus, maybe a Boston Beer Co., where you can survive without making 85 IPAs. Start with Dan here.
So first off, I wish we had this guy's contact info because I want to call him out right now. If you go to Sierra Nevada, right under their seasonal is their high altitude beer, which is Narwhal Bigfoot, a triple IPA and barrel aged narwhal. So don't tell me they aren't making the beers that I just said they were making before I even went to their website. Cause you're picking and choosing information to try and make it sound like, you know, like it's something different than it is. And even under their specialties, they still have their stout and porter. So it's not like they're only making IPAs when, you know, they're known for a pale. I mean, that's 95% of their beer sold, I'm sure. But anyways, talking about IPAs, I actually think, I don't know if I'm a doomer, maybe I am. It just as go ahead and make 27 IPAs, you know, with milk and whatever curdling shit you put in there. I don't care, but make something else besides it for the people that don't want an IPA. Have a stout, have a porter, have a red, have an amber, have something that isn't going to taste like all 27 have similar taste to, because it's all an IPA. That's all I really care about.
Now, you're not saying have all of them. Have one.
Have something. Them. Yeah, have something.
Okay.
Just like, sure. Yeah, have something. Have a stout. Have a porter. Have a red. Something like that. Something that's not just, oh, here's 27 beers that all taste almost exactly the same that you can't really tell the difference between. So I don't know if that makes me a doomer. Maybe, maybe not. But as long as you have something different, I'm happy.
Wendy?
Are we only talking about like big beers that are distributing? Because I have been to 3 different states in the last 2 months and hit other breweries while I was there. And I was at Against the Grain and they had maybe 1 IPA on tap and then everything else was different. I went to Monic Brewing in Kentucky. They had 1 or 2 IPAs, and then they had another 8 or 9 taps that were different. We went to Brooklyn, the one in Brooklyn, or no, I'm sorry, the Bronx Brewing, and they only had 1 or 2 IPAs on tap. So I don't think that this article really shows the true colors of what's actually going on. Yes, there are going to be IPAs because they're popular. They have to brew some type of IPA in order to get people that like IPAs to come in. But I think most brewers are making sure that they have stuff for people to try.
Nick, what do you think?
I would agree that I'm kind of like in Dan's, you know, position. I wouldn't consider myself to be a doomer. I'm not really agnostic about it, but the whole IPA craze has kind of slightly gotten a little bit out of hand. And there's only so many things you can do with IPA without it being the same thing over time and time and time again. So if there's a way, and I know breweries are doing, you know, they're always trying new things. They're always trying different adjuncts, maybe different hop profiles, things like that. But I think we've said it. I've said it once. I'll say it again. There's too many other good beers out there that we should be trying to rush to see how much of a hothead we can turn into. And it was like when Flying Buffalo or, you know, Bourbon County chasing all those. I'm not going to go chasing IPAs. There's just too much good stuff still out there. So while I acknowledge that the style is not going away at all, it's kind of taken like a mind of its own approach. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to lose sleep over trying to, you know, see if I'm going to turn into a hop one of these days with having a, you know, a quadruple IPA or whatever the next crazy trend's going to turn into.
Well, I mean, we're way past quadruple IPA.
I don't know what's fifth tuple. I don't know.
Triple milkshake IPA with tire irons, I think is tire the next iron.
It's got milk, sugar, and ball sweat. Is the
electrolytes, Dan? It's refreshing.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my gosh!
It's gonna help.
Oh, Daniel, you just went there. Oh man, I'm sorry you had to hear that, Wendy.
That doesn't bother me. I do think it's interesting that I'm the one on this panel that is actually like, I like IPAs.
Don't get me wrong.
Considering
nothing,
that when I started out, I wouldn't drink it for the life of me.
Right. And Wendy, I was the same way too. But it's just, I don't know if it's just as I've gotten older, I just realized that there's so much more. And I remember the last time I went to Summer Beer Fest, I think it was 2019. I think it was one of the times we poured. And the triple mash, you know, I'm going, it's not an IPA, you know, Dragon's Milk triple mash. It was like the hot thing ever. And that was at the time when bourbon barrel aged beers were like, you know, how big can one brewery go? Who could take it to the absolute max? I got that triple mash. I was like, no, I can't do it. I could not do it. I even told Rob, I'm like, Rob, I can't do this. This is too much. So I think there is certainly a line that gets crossed by, you know, from individual to individual. For the bourbon barrel aged beers, triple mash was it for me. And I'm like, I couldn't do it anymore. So while I acknowledge IPA is not going to go away, I'm just curious as when does the line get drawn as to like, okay, this is too much. It probably won't be like bourbon barrel age, but to Dan's point,
IPA. Just tastes like bourbon.
At that point, just drink bourbon.
Yeah.
There's 50,000 bourbons out there. Just drink bourbon at that point.
I do like the bourbon that's been aged in the beer barrels.
Does that count? The New Holland one?
Yeah, the beer barrel bourbon.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good.
There's River Rouge, now unexpected, but River Rouge used to do it with Motor City where they would trade the barrel back and forth and put, you know, a spirit in it and then put a beer in it and then put a spirit in it.
It's really smart.
Which was just a fun little thing to do that you were just able to do with your, you know, because they were across the street from each other. So you're able to just kind of bring the barrel over and manage it. I do hate IPAs. Let's just be honest. I don't like them at all. I don't like that they are literally just the trend of everything, where it's just more IPAs, more bitterness, more hops, more lactose, more milkshake. Like, sooner or later, like, I understand my biases because my biases come from us growing up in Warren, Dragonmead. Like, we never had that issue. You went to Black Lotus, you went to Dragon Mead, you went to Baraboo, you went to Kunin.
No.
You never ran into that issue of being able to not have a large quantity of styles. Like, so many styles for you to choose from. And when we go to these breweries who aren't, you know, when we were going to those breweries, you know, in the late 2000s, they were still 10, 15 years old at that time. So I understand where we kind of grew up and what we had and, you know, what I yearn for and how the world has changed around me. But again, I just, like Dan said, I just want one. Just make one brown, amber, porter, stout. Just one. If I go somewhere, if I can't find one, it just it makes me sad. And sure, I can go for a Kolsch, I can go for a lager, but I don't know. I understand the difference of wanting to make money and wanting to make, good, not that the IPAs are bad, but I don't know. Wendy, you look like you
want to... When I come to visit your brewery, I want to try a flight, and I want 5 different types of beer. I don't want 5 stouts. I don't want 5 IPAs. I would like to try a variety and see just what type of brewery you are.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that in mind, let's go to the next article. Nick, you know what? I feel like you got a good article. Bring it to me.
I got a good article? Are you sure about that?
I feel like you do.
I don't know. I mean, I pick a lot of weird ones sometimes. This one I don't think is weird. This one's actually kind of serious. So we talked about hop shortages on this show. We've talked about ingredient shortages. Let's talk about CO2, because now that's becoming short on supply, at least in one state in the United States, and that is in Massachusetts. Many breweries in the United States, according to WBUR in Massachusetts, have struggled to find CO2 because of pandemic-related supply chain issues. In Massachusetts, it has been fine up until just recently when one such brewery, Night Shift Brewing, learned that its local supplier of CO2 couldn't potentially deliver CO2 to their brewery for at least 1 year. So 12 months, at least 12 months behind before they can get their next CO2 shipment. They have gone, late Night Shift Brewing has gone to now the lengths of moving its entire production from in-house to contract. They are actually doing it in 2 different locations, one in Massachusetts and another one in Rhode Island. So they're now moving production out of state in some regards. So a major natural source of food grade CO2 in the Jackson Dome area of Mississippi has been facing contamination issues. Per the executive director of the Massachusetts Brewers Guild, Katie Stinchin, and by also saying, quote, "It's created a ripple effect to our breweries here in Massachusetts." We've known this for many years and have tried to solve the problem, investing millions in equipment, adjusting schedules and operations to make it more efficient, etc. Night Shift Brewing has even gone on the record saying that it could cut into production staff and also cutting its production staff by as much as 50 to 75% of a 12-person production staff over at their brewery. Not sure. This is the first time we've actually heard, at least I've heard about a CO2 shortage anywhere. Massachusetts, I'm not sure. There's not sure how many breweries are in Massachusetts, but where there's a lot of people in the New England area kind of crammed in one little space. I would imagine that this could be the start of a ripple effect across all of the country, potentially. I don't know what your guys' thoughts when you guys hear about CO2 shortages. Let's start with Daniel on this one. What's your take?
Yeah, I have not heard about this before, so I have no idea what goes into compressing and putting CO2 into a tank. Maybe one of you do, but I never thought that could be a thing as far as being short on it. Did it give any context? I didn't catch all of it. Did it give any context as to what's happening with this company? That to the reason why they can't deliver for an entire year?
They did not go into great detail as to why they couldn't do it, other than I'm guessing one of the places that is abundant, which is this area in Mississippi, having contamination issues. So is that the only place where there's CO2 that occurs naturally? I highly doubt it, but kind of like if you look at the state of Michigan, for example, we are a coal abundant state up until just not that long ago. We have a lot of coal burning fire power plants, for example. So it's a very abundant resource here in Michigan. So is there other areas where you can get CO2 potentially? I would assume so, but I'm sure that's going to cost money to get it. It's going to cost money to ship it, and it's going to cost money to, you know, just get it hooked up to the line, essentially. So I'm sure all those are factors that are taken into consideration. That's more on the logistical side behind the scenes that people like the, you know, the four of us, Rob, the five of us on this show, you know, we don't really get to see a whole lot because it's generally behind the scenes stuff. So.
It's funny. I'm looking back just at articles to see if this has happened previously. Apparently this has been going on back to January, at least that I can find. And it's been happening in the UK too, as far as CO2 shortage. It's really interesting. I never thought that could actually be a thing.
I just found an article from Italy.
Really?
So they're having the same issue.
So I'm wondering, is this the first instance widely publicized or widely known here in the United States? Is this the first? Is this the turn of something new that brewers have to be careful about now?
You know, I'm actually kind of excited. Will this get everyone to turn to cask ale and beer engines at that that's point? If they can't get like, I'm in. I am in. If that's the case,
I don't know. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. I don't know. Wendy, what about what's your take?
So this article that I just found from, it looks like National World, says the reasons behind this fees include a cold winter in Europe last year meant more gas than usual was used and supplies were eaten into. That's interesting. Who would have thought that this would be an issue? My first thought was there is not more than one place, because you wouldn't think that something that happened in Mississippi is going to have that big of an effect on Massachusetts. And Night Shift isn't a little brewery. I mean, they're a pretty big player over there. So I don't know. I find it interesting. It's definitely something I'm going to have to look into a little bit more.
Ken, is there any chance Wendy mentioned that they're not a small brewery. They're rather big, you know, bigger than what one may think. Can we get some numbers as to how many there?
Give me like 30 seconds.
Yeah. As Ken's doing that, I'm curious.
Interestingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think what's really shocking is that they're moving production to a, you know, contract brewing to a completely different state. Now, granted, it's in New England. You can get to five different states in an hour.
Right.
I'm being facetious, but.
So Night Shift was one of my favorite breweries that I went to. They were actually, I spent a long time talking to them about hops and what types of hops they put in their beer. They were one of the breweries that helped me on my IPA journey.
Oh, really?
IPA journey.
to kill some time while Ken's looking up the numbers.
I know, right? Gotta love the news segment.
Right?
Ken, you're on mute. I hear you talking.
That's all right. We got the numbers right now. While I'm looking up the numbers, Wendy and Nick, can you check your mics to make sure that
I hear it. I hear it too. It's just looking. Okay.
It might be a Wendy issue. It seems a little crackly.
It's very faint on mine.
Is that better?
No, I just heard the
crackle. No, I just heard it again.
You said Night Shift is the fifth largest brewery in the state of Massachusetts and currently ranked 72nd in the nation.
Oh, wow.
They're at 38,840 barrels. They've been growing. They had a little drop off in 2020. And when I mean little, I mean they were down by like 8% from 2019. So COVID didn't really hurt them, except hurt their growth. So in comparison, at 38,840, they would be the fourth largest brewery in Michigan, behind Shorts, New Holland, and Bell's. And of course,
they're actually a big player in the game.
Yes. Sorry, guys, no CO2 for you.
I didn't realize that you could get that kind of a shortage. Like, obviously, you have the food grade CO2 is something that you need to make sure you're getting and using. You can't use the wrong CO2, but I just didn't realize it was something that you could just actually run out of or have an issue with or a shortage. So it's just something you don't really think about. But as Dan said, if it gives me more cask ale, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm in.
Let's get a shortage here in Michigan, folks.
One more thing I want to add to this story, not necessarily tied to the sea. I mean, it's tied to the shortage, but more for the workers. They are basically alluding to job cuts. They will continue to pay its production staff that they could ultimately lay off through at least October 1st of this year. So they got a couple months before, you know, before they could potentially be let go, or at least try and find them other jobs within the company. So that's at least that's promising, at least for some of the employees. But, you know, if this is the first brewery to start seeing it, what's to say that some of the other bigger ones in the country can also start seeing it?
Yeah, they can't have a small staff either with the amount of production they're doing. There's got to be a few workers there, mm-hmm. which has got to hurt.
I would agree. And they did also post this on their Instagram page not that long ago, Night Shift Brewing. They did do a rather long post on their Instagram 2 days ago. So if you're interested, find Night Shift Brewing on Instagram. It's a very long post.
Well, Dan, what's your article?
Speaking of, you know, well, not quite a shortage here, but interesting stats coming out from June. Thought I'd be fun to talk about, getting away from some of that modern times and everything we've been talking about lately. But U.S. brewers shipped an estimated 16 million barrels of beer in June 2022. It's actually a 3.3% decline, or almost 541,000 barrels of beer compared to June of 2021, the Beer Institute reported, citing domestic tax paid shipments from the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. So this is kind of touched on what we talked into before. Are we starting to see a decline of people buying beer and really going towards, you know, RTDs, non-alcoholic beverages, that sort of thing? 3.3% or over 500,000 barrels is not a insignificant number. That's more than a lot of breweries, most breweries make in a year. I was curious on everyone's thoughts on that. Ken, let's start with you.
Oh, okay. We can start with me. I was actually looking at the numbers to see, and if you that's more than the entire state production of Michigan if you disclude Bell's and Founders.
So if you discluded those two, that's more barrels than are shipped or produced by every brewery in Michigan
combined
over the entire year.
Yeah, it's more than what Bell's does, and I think it's more than what Founders does, because I think Bell's might outsell Founders. I don't know for sure, but yeah. So they that's a lot of barrels. Yeah, I think people are definitely moving from beer to RTDs, to wines, to other forms of alcohol that they just want. Like, I think beer has fallen off a bit just because the fourth segment, as people call it, the RTDs, is just really exploding. And those people are going to be coming from the beer drinkers who are drinking lighter beers and shandies and hefes, and people who are drinking, well, really people who are drinking all styles of beers, because they're going to go in and they're going to drink now an RTD that's a Moscow Mule or an RTD that's a Paloma, and they don't have to drink a Paloma flavored beer.
Now, it's funny, you know, we've talked about on the show going back to 2016 about, you know, the crash, you know, some type of, you know, hitting the peak of craft beer and having the bubble burst. Do you think this is a start to that?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I'll gladly say that. I think we're going to see shifts, but a bubble burst, absolutely not. I mean, we talked about it in 2016 because we did not think when we thought craft beer, we thought it was very niche. Back in even, you know, 2012, 2014, even 2016 when we were doing this show. But now it is mainstream and not niche. Like, people purposely go on beer trips now that aren't beer drinkers. They're going on beer trips. They're going on, where's the nearest brewery? Like, The people who use the Michigan Brewery Map app aren't, you know, the nerds that know every single brewery in the state. They're the people who literally just be like, hey, we're going to visit my parents over in, Beulah, Michigan. What's close? Oh, wow, there's three breweries within 10-minute drive. Like, you can go hit all three of them. Or, you know, my excuse to get out of the home visiting my in-laws. So the craft beer world adapted a lot. To bring in these people, I think we're going to see the shift to more local breweries that support the local community as opposed to massive production facilities. I think you're going to see a lot less old nations coming in, and you know they've doubled their production in 4 years, and a lot more, let's say, presidents. Over in Portage, you're going to see a brewery like that, or Wiltsy's in Oscoda. I was like, I knew it sounded wrong when I said it the first time. You're going to see these smaller breweries be put into cities where you're going to be like, wow, that city is getting a brewery, but that brewery is going to, bring up that city to where people will now go to the city. People will, that'll be the local bar.
Sadly, I'll still be in the beer wasteland.
Yeah, you'll somehow still not.
Yeah, like, still be nothing.
City.
Thank you, yeah. Supernatural, for breaking that up a little bit.
You got one coming to Wayne here soon.
To Wayne. Yeah. What's going on in Garden City? Is Raimi still the place to hang out at?
No, they are gone.
Are they gone? What about sports venues? Is that still a thing?
Oh, that's still a thing. Oh, yeah, they do senior dinners, man. People love them.
Jeez. So, Wendy, what's your opinion on this? You travel a lot for beer. Do you think this is going to affect breweries out there, seeing a decrease?
I think that Ken is very right, that we're going to see a lot more of the smaller breweries be successful. We're going to see less of the large distribution and more of the community style breweries that are catering to the people right around them more than sending their beer everywhere. I think that it works because a lot of the real, I don't want to say real, a lot of the, a lot of craft beer drinkers will travel for beer. So they'll be the people going on vacation and hitting every brewery like Ken was talking about.
What about you, Nick? What are your thoughts?
Kind of looking at this article again, like, we see shipments coming. Is there any correlation to some of the stuff we've talked about previously about shortages and stuff? Are people not getting enough beer out?
And that's why it's going down? That's entirely possible.
I don't know if there's any truth to it, but it just, we talked about CO2 shortages. We talked about hop shortages. We talked about other supply shortages, not just in beer, but all across the board. What's the possibility? But let me also have another thought to that. What's the possibility of it's shortage related? On the flip side, I went into a random party store today and I saw a whole shelf, from one end to the other end of RTDs. The entire top was RTDs from companies I've never even heard of. And
That's how it's going.
And that very, very well could be that we are starting to see the shift. So again, I think there's two different sides to the story, in my opinion, but that's just one store in Washington Township, which I don't know if they're really big craft beer drinkers, even though Brown Iron Brew House is right down the street.
Well, let's think about it real quick. Is seltzers were a huge seller because they were, flavored water. They were not a beer, so they weren't bitter, they weren't piney, they weren't juicy, they weren't malty, they weren't biscuity. It was just alcoholic water with some type of fruit flavoring.
And also slightly health conscious, slightly.
For sure.
Calories
and carbohydrates, obviously. Mm-hmm. The best you're going to do is when you go straight liquor, and the second best is going to be some type of seltzer that isn't like a smooth,
which is
400 calories for a can.
Yeah.
But people went from drinking beers and just dealing with beers to having the seltzers. And now that the seltzers are there, people realize with the RTDs that people, if you can make it, mass produce it and make it taste all right, like it doesn't have to be good, just all right. Like it has to taste kind of like a Paloma or kind of like a mojito. People will drink it. It also is a lot easier for states like us here in Michigan, because one, they're all canned, therefore you could take it on the boat, you could, you know, bring them in the tube. There are a lot of things within our state, like, and other states might have some type of comparable to it, but for us here in Michigan, that's a huge thing, being able to, you can't take vodka unless it's like Popov onto a boat. So
is that because it's plastic?
Yes, that was the reason why. you just can't bring glass onto a boat. So that's why it's important for a lot of these people to be able to, you know, get these cans, because then they can bring it on the boat, bring it on to the lake, bring it to, you know, people don't want to bring glass to a beach, so they bring a can. You know, cans are a lot easier to...
A glass by the pool.
I mean, as long as it's a you know, a can, yeah, no glass by the pool. Now I heard what you said. I thought you said a glass by the pool, like drinking by the pool, not no glass near the pool, like every sign that now in my head is triggered every time I've went to like a hotel or something. But no, you're correct. That it was a missing target that a bunch of people, as Nick said, has finally hit, because you can bring glass to the pool by bringing these RTD cans. You don't have to go mix a cocktail. You have an RTD can. You don't have to go to the bar. You have an RTD can. And no, they're not going to taste as good as if you went to like Kiesling or, you know, some type of really good cocktail bar, but they're still going to do what you want them to do. And that's get you drunk and taste kind of like, I've always found most RTDs way too syrupy and way too like, just not good.
Too much sugar.
And that's the same with any mass produced drink. Like there was, I went to, I think I've mentioned it a few times on the show. I went to a wrestling show over at the old Stroh's Ice Cream. That's now Detroit City Distillery, I believe, their whiskey room. And they had like a pre-made old fashioned and it tastes like trash. And I've had their old fashions and they're amazing. And it was like one of the biggest disappointments in my life is like getting this drink and it just tastes like a premix. And it just so depressing.
Well, I've always been disappointed in like shandies and radlers that you get in a bottle. I love to make them. If I'm hanging out at the pool or whatever, I'll make a shandy like crazy, but I don't like them when they're in a bottle and they're pre-made because there's too much sugar.
You know what, Wendy, before we go to your article, I've got just the shandy for you for the 7-year anniversary 300th episode party. It's a, I aged it, so you know it's good, because you know it's
a chocoberry. It's a chocoberry shandy.
It's a Leinenkugel cocoa shandy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there it is. You gave me one can of that one time. I almost threw that across the room when I tasted that. Well, don't even try it.
We'll crack it open on the party. If you're listening to the show, folks, we love our fans. We appreciate it. If you think you're worthy of joining us, we are going to be celebrating in Oakland County. The date is going to be October 14th. It's a Friday. You are welcome to apply to come in and join us. Most likely.
You have to apply?
Apply, yeah. You have to apply, get 10 questionnaire, or just email us, betteron@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you. But we want to interact with our fans. We want to say thank you so much, especially for being on this journey for 7 years. 300, way more than 300, but 300 plus episodes. But enough with that promotion. Wendy, we still have one more article, and that's yours.
So I decided to lighten things up this time. I have a couple of different ones. I might save the other one. Just because it's fun to have in your pocket. So I think this time I'm going to go with the 14 discontinued beers that you will never drink again. And it sounds so sad when you say it out loud, but I'm just wondering how many of us have actually had these beers. It is a mash.com episode or, article, and it's a couple weeks old now, but I thought we'd go through a couple of them. Brown Derby. Do you guys know what that one is?
No.
Oh.
No. Falstaff. I think we all know what that one is.
No, I'm not familiar with that one either.
It's there's Henry Weinhard's Private Reserve. Have you ever heard of that
before? I recognize the label in the bottle.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
For sure.
Jack's Beer. This claims to have been the first beer to come up with the concept of a six-pack, and that was in the 1940s.
Dan, you remember that?
Yeah, you know, I was drinking that when I was there the day they released it. I was at the brewery.
You grabbed the first six-pack, right?
Yeah, me and Rob were there.
Was it in the little rings, or was it in a cardboard?
Oh, it was in the plastic rings. Yeah. It had those tabs on the top, not like we have now that you have to like rip open.
Did you buy it during Victory Day there, Daniel?
Yeah, it was the VJ Day celebration that they released those. We were getting down drinking some of those smashing bottles of sake on the ground.
Keystone's Raspberry Keylightful.
No, wait.
It's just a fantastic name all on its own.
I'm looking at this right now. Nobody drank that.
Nobody drank that. Why would they get rid of it?
Nobody drank that.
Oh, I'm sure somebody that wanted some of those RTDs
were
drinking that raspberry key lightful. Magnum.
Oh, they got rid of Magnum?
We've all had one of those.
I feel like I just saw this.
Wait, this is a plastic bottle in this picture. Did they switch to a plastic 40?
Shatterproof.
Well, that way you can take it on the boat.
Yeah, I guess.
Right, there you go, Dan.
Meisterbrau.
Look at these cans. Oh my god.
Where are these from?
Folks, if you're listening via the podcast or YouTube, you can go to the notes and get the link for this news article so you can follow.
Oh my gosh.
Continue.
So Meisterbrau was actually a recipe tweak and rebranded into Miller Lite when the beer was purchased by Miller. So that was interesting. Miller actually started out as Meisterbrau.
So this is Miller Lite.
You can't get it, but you can.
Yeah, this is just everyone drinks Miller Lite. We still drink this beer.
Michelob Ultra Fruit Infused, which I thought was fun. I don't ever remember that one.
I don't know if I've even seen these.
Not at all. Three infusions came out from 2007 to 2010. I was not drinking wine cooler as I was already 21.
You weren't drinking wine cooler since you were 12 years old.
That might be why I never saw it.
Oh, man.
MGD 64.
No, this is MGD 64 lemonade.
The lemonade, yeah.
Which I didn't even know they made that.
I didn't know they had a lemonade.
Didn't know that existed.
Thank God that's gone.
National Bohemian's Crab Shack Shandy, which is flavored with Old Bay seasoning, which seems a little weird to me, but you know, it's weird.
At least they tried.
Yeah,
they tried.
This maybe would have been good if you had like a King Crab over in Boston. Maybe I don't know.
I don't know if I could agree with that.
I know, but. You go to New England to get the seafood, man. Come on.
Way to look on the bright side there, Nick.
I tried. I tried.
Let's see. Old Styles Cooler by the Lake Shandy. I don't know what that is either.
50-50 mix of beer and lemonade.
So it's an old style Radler.
Right.
Yeah, no one drank that.
Olympia beer, which I find interesting because everywhere you go in Seattle, they talk about Olympia.
Got to get Rainier when you're in Seattle now.
Seattle. My brother made sure I tried one.
Yep, that's one of the rotations. Like if I'm in Baltimore, you got to have a Natty Bo, Chicago, and Old Styles, Seattle, or Rainier. It was just something I always did when I traveled.
True story. Pete's Wicked Ale.
Oh, they got rid of Pete's Wicked Ale? I didn't even know.
Apparently.
Over a decade ago.
Decade ago. Oh,
no idea.
2011, Daniel.
It's been long since you've wanted one.
Pete's Wicked is pretty much a Gen X beer having come of age in 1986.
Oh, wow.
I remember drinking it in college. And then Red, White, and Blue.
This looks like a PBR knockoff.
I guarantee it is.
Dude, I looked at the, as soon as you see the bottles, it looks like those old stubby bottles. I looked at them like, yeah. Is this PBR?
It's like a Blatz bottle, but it's like a PBR ripoff.
Yes. That's so, it.
Fun fact, it actually looks like the either the beer or the label or the beer recipe was remade in 2018 at Pabst.
Oh, go figure.
Milwaukee Brewery tap room.
That's funny. Wow.
Renamed the Captain Pabst Pilot House.
You know what I realized is not on there? Some Steel Reserve.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's discontinued.
You know, it's funny. I saw a Smash Steel Reserve can like across the street like earlier this week. I was like, oh, I didn't know they were still making that.
I love
there
I love
must still be places
I'm
with it.
Such a beer drinker. When you said Smash Steel Reserve, I thought single malt, single hop Steel Reserve.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. We're going to be talking a lot about these types of beers and these types of topics next week. We are bringing in a guest podcast, you might say. So these guys are going to be on the show next week with us. We're going to have a fun little panel as we talk about some not lost but forgotten beers, breweries, and styles. So that's going to do it for the Better on Draft, the news segment, July 29, 2022. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's... Better on Draft. Thanks for the one-star reviews. Have a great night.
Oh, my blood.